This is World Lutheran News Digest. The work by the Hehewe Longasi Lutheran Fihawa.
I'm Kip Allen, host of World Lutheran News Digest. My guest today is Tim Gigline with Focus on the Family based in Washington. He's sort of our ears and eyes in the nation's capital, and he knows what's going on and what issues are facing us. Tim, this is a vitally important election year. We are seeing some enormous challenges to us as people of faith and really for us as a nation. A number of the issues I think that we're facing right now is, one is I think the Civil Rights Act is going to be redefined. And we're seeing this right now with the same-sex marriage and with sexual things in the bathroom, the whole thing there being under the guise of civil rights. Is this one of the things that we're looking at?
Well, it certainly is, Kip, and thank you for inviting me onto the program. You know, I want to take just one step back to address something that you mentioned early in your introduction, which is that, you know, if we all live to be 1,000 years old, none of us will forget the year 2016. I mean, this is genuinely a year unlike any other year. And there are those seminal years in American political or public policy history. You know, the election of 1800, which pitted Thomas Jefferson against John Adams. I mean, what a year for America. The election of 1860, the first election of Abraham Lincoln on the very cusp of the Civil War. The year 2000, Bush against Gore. You know, what a remarkable year that was. 36 days after the election, we had to wait until we found out, you know, who had won. And 2016 has really shaped up, for the reasons you mentioned, to be a year unlike any other year. It's not just that it's Trump and Clinton, at least presumptively, or any of the other, you know, potential candidates, although we certainly think it's going to be Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. But what makes this such a remarkable year for Lutheran Christians, for Christians in general, for people of faith, is what is really going on behind the scenes. And what's going on behind the scenes is an attempt to rewrite the Civil Rights Act of 1964. That is a very pivotal year and a very pivotal piece of legislation. And what's happening is by not congressional decision, not even by judicial fiat, but this is a year where the Obama administration, through the Department of Justice, is seeking to change essentially the meaning, purpose, and definition of the Civil Rights Act to elevate sexual orientation and sexual identification with the issue of race. In other words, a new view, a new definition that really bears down very much on our religious liberty and rights of conscience. In other words, Kip, this is not sort of the battle royale or a galactic battle necessarily over a bathroom. What it is ultimately about is a battle over whether our religious liberty and our freedom of conscience will be restricted and constricted. And it's easy to lose that in the bathroom wars that we're, you know, all been subjected to in the last month or so.
Well, I look at the mainstream churches that hold to the traditional views of sexual roles and marriage. Us, of course, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, but the Roman Catholic Church, the Southern Baptist Convention, these are mainstream religions that encompass a huge number of Christians in the United States. And suddenly these churches are being told that you people are haters. You're wrong. You're evil. Your values are worthless.
Yes, and may I say directly to that point, tied to the one that I was making, you know, one of the bills, one of the very important pieces of legislation that most of your listeners may not be aware of is called Title IX. And I really, you know, just because of our limited time, will not take, you know, the viewers' time to really go into depth about this. But Title IX is one of the most important pieces of legislation that has to do with the definition of the application of federal funding to colleges, to universities, to a host of places. And the very purpose and meaning of Title IX is being changed. And to your point, this is not a change that the Congress woke up one day and said, let's change the meaning and purpose of Title IX. It wasn't the courts or the judges who said, let's change the wording. It is the administration and what they are doing and what this means. The meaning and purpose of this is that if the language is changed in Title IX to apply to broad categories of self-sexual identification or the issue of sexual orientation, what it could ultimately do, to your point, Kip, is to stop the federal funding to Christian colleges and universities, to Christian nonprofits. And then, of course, it opens a whole area of federal law and federal regulation that ultimately leads down a path of the following. Should churches receive tax exemption? Should synagogues receive tax exemption? Should Christian colleges and universities receive tax exemption? How should federal funding be withheld for student loans at Christian colleges or at Christian seminaries? In other words, Kip, this is very deep water, and it's easy for all of us to think, you know, what is this silly battle over a bathroom? Or what is this battle going on over here about something else? At the end of the day, you have to follow the breadcrumbs. And at the end of the day, what it ultimately leads to is a real crackdown on our religious liberty. So that's why the bathroom battle, so-called, matters. That's why these debates over a potential redefinition of the Civil Rights Act or the redefinition of Title IX, you know, these are issues, these are regulations, these are federal matters that every Christian should become conversant in because it will ultimately bear down upon their religious liberty.
Well, for example, with the Concordia University system, under Title IX, we might be forced to, or at least they could try to force us to accommodations for, say, a same-sex couple in a dormitory.
By all means, yes, absolutely. And may I say, I'm very glad that you mentioned that because the Supreme Court has stopped hearing cases for the first part of this year. And we're going to receive very soon, which is to say probably in the second, third, or fourth week of June, we will receive, you know, a very important decision on the part of the Supreme Court, which is one of the most important maybe in the last 25 years on religious liberty, the so-called Little Sisters of the Poor case. And there are seven other Christian colleges and universities who are co-litigants in that case. So just in the next month to month and a half, we're going to receive that decision. But coming up after the summer, when the court comes back in session after the first Tuesday in October, one of the first cases they will hear is the Trinity Lutheran case.
We've been following that.
Major religious liberty case that ties in very directly with the subject matter of your great program today.
Well, just to refresh our audience's memory on Trinity, this is a case involving, of all things, a playground that's run by a church. And there is a program here in Missouri where the Department of Natural Resources takes recycled rubber, recycled tires, for rubberizing the grounds of playgrounds, specifically for children's safety. Trinity Lutheran applied for a grant for that, and they met every criteria and then were denied specifically because it's owned by a religious organization.
Yes, and may I say, I'm so glad you raised this, because, Kip, the primary architect of our Constitution was James Madison. And I'm not taking a license to say that if James Madison were to come back to the 21st century and be debriefed on the case where, you know, some Lutheran church in Missouri was, you know, potentially denied, you know, federal funding in this regard or any funding or any cooperation on the part of the state for a playground material is a complete usurpation of the issue of church and state. This is not something that the founding fathers ever intended. It's not something that they wanted. And this artificially created high wall between Trinity Lutheran Church and the state of Missouri is a complete 21st century reconstruction. And, you know, again, these are the issues that we are facing in the 21st century. And we can, in one sense, continue to be astonished and surprised by them. Or we can say this is the new normal. This is the new orthodoxy that is being imposed upon Christians in the 21st century. How are we going to litigate? How are we going to be proactive so that we are not always on the defensive? These are, in my view, the most important issues in American domestic policy, because if our religious liberty and rights of conscience, Kip, if they are not categorically constitutionally protected, if they are not secure, then I think it is not an overstatement to say that every other one of our liberties is on the line.
Absolutely. And one thing going into this election that I think some people perhaps might not be fully aware is that this election is going to shape the federal judiciary for years to come. We've already got one vacancy on the Supreme Court. We've got, three or four justices who are well into their 80s. And then, of course, there are the normal federal appointments to the federal court system. This is a vital issue. We know that Hillary Clinton, who is the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, we know what her views are, and they are not friendly to us. They are hostile to us. Donald Trump,
and may I say, as a U.S. senator from New York and as a Secretary of State, Kip, she and the personnel who worked for her were unfriendly, decidedly unfriendly to religious liberty. And in fact, in a number of the speeches that then Secretary of State Clinton gave, she purposely changed the wording from religious liberty to freedom of worship, not freedom of religion or freedom or religious liberty in the way that we talk about it. But the new phrase was freedom to worship. Well, freedom to worship is another way of privatizing faith. That, in other words, it's okay if you practice your religious liberty in your home or in the confines of a synagogue or a church or a chapel. But, you know, that's where the freedom of worship is defined. But don't take, in other words, your religious liberty, you know, into the public square. And to your point, on Inauguration Day, regardless of who the new president is, we will have one Supreme Court vacancy of the greatest defender of religious liberty in the contemporary history of the court, Justice Scalia. We will have Justice Kennedy, who will be 81 years old, and Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who will be 83, and Justice Stephen Breyer, who will be almost 79. So your point, Kip, is very well taken. The reality is that whoever the next president is, President Clinton, President Trump, or somebody else, potentially they could make up to three or four selections for the Supreme Court, which would remake the entire composition of the Supreme Court, at least for another generation. And you wrap into that literally dozens and dozens of vacancies in the appellate and district court. And what you have is a fundamental remaking of the American court system by whomever is the next president.
And this can't be overemphasized. So much of what's happening today is not happening because of the Congress. It's not happening even because of the presidency so much. What's happening is because of judicial rulings. And I think this is going, I don't think the founders ever anticipated the courts would have this much influence on society. But it certainly has. I mean, even I think the court's rulings now would even have appalled FDR.
I could not agree with you more. And in fact, taking two steps back to where we were a few minutes ago in our discussion, Justice Scalia, in the Obergefell decision, for those who don't know what this is, the Obergefell decision was the decision where five members of the Supreme Court imposed a new definition of marriage, family, and parenting on us when they created a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. And in Justice Scalia's dissent, it's one of the most brilliant pieces of judicial writing in the last quarter century. Mostly, that dissent in Obergefell, Kip, is not about marriage, it's not about homosexuality. It essentially Justice Scalia talks at length about the reality of judicial tyranny. And what he says is that if the Supreme Court, nine unelected lawyers, continues to create out of thin air constitutional rights that do not exist or imposes new definitions in court decisions, which is a form of social engineering, what Justice Scalia says ultimately is that you have taken away self-government, what he calls the first liberty. He says that if you've taken away self-government from the American people, and either the Supreme Court or the president unconstitutionally is imposing their views and making it essentially the legislative reality of the country, he says at that point you have moved away from a constitutional republic. And I think Justice Scalia is exactly right.
We're seeing it again, for example, with the Justice Department now trying to impose this mandate on the state of North Carolina, saying, no, you have to allow transgenders in the bathrooms. We don't care what your people say. Now, I will say I'm glad to see that North Carolina is finally fighting back. A lot of states have just rolled over. North Carolina is holding firm, and they filed suit against the Justice Department. We're waiting to see how this
will... Certainly a day of suits and countersuits. May I say, because I think that probably a lot of people who are listening to this program have followed this story and are a bit befuddled by it. And I think with good reason. And I think it's important to sort of descend, if I may say, from the legal philosophies, from the legal battles, from the he said, she said, and go back to first principles. Here is what is happening in its most elemental state, Kip. You have a law in North Carolina, and remember, this has now become the most controversial law in North Carolina. And what the law says is the following. If you are a man, you must use the men's restroom. If you are a woman, you must use the woman's restroom. This is the subject of major lawsuits from the Department of Justice and threats and mandates from the Department of Justice, the state of North Carolina. I mean, it's really quite illogical, but that's where we're at.
It's absurd. My wife and I were out for lunch the other day, and we stopped at a restaurant. We stopped at a restroom afterwards in the mall, and the restrooms were one for women and one for unisex.
Uh-huh.
There was no male. There's no male. Unisex and women.
Yeah, may I say, it's become the so-called bathroom wars, and may I say, for most people, the understanding is that the sex on your birth certificate is your sex. Now, those are fighting words in the 21st century. And so it goes back to the whole question of what is a man and what is a woman? Are there two sexes or are there more? George Orwell famously said, in the height of a battle, in another century, in an era of great deceit, it is a revolution, revolutionary to tell the truth. And I think it's, important that we as Christians tell the truth. It's not controversial to say that men should use the men's room and women should use the women's room. There's nothing that is hateful, spiteful, or bigoted about that.
Tim, I'm going to be a little subjective here, if you don't mind. I'm looking back over my life, and I cannot recall such vitriol and such bitter hatred on two sides of the American public, even during the Vietnam War. I don't recall it being this bad.
It's an age of revolution. It's an age of rebellion. It's an age of rage. It's an age of toxic differences in the country. Our country has been riven. We were riven in a revolution. Remember, one-third of Americans supported the revolution, one-third of Americans supported England, and one-third of Americans were indifferent. We had a major civil war. The differences were beyond enormous. And at the end of it, 750,000 Americans were dead. We've had two world wars. We've had Great Depressions. We had the Vietnam Watergate era. These are eras of great division. But the social and moral revolution that we are living through now is really unprecedented, equaled perhaps only by the first sexual revolution of the late 1960s. But the current iteration, unfortunately, is very deep, it's very wide, and the stakes are very high because it goes ultimately to the following. What is a family? What is a parent? What is religious liberty? What is human life? These are not tax increases or cuts. This is not foreign or security policy per se. These are issues of the home and the hearth, and above all, our first constitutional liberty, which is religious liberty. And this is the one that I think that we as Christians ought focus on like a laser beam.
Tim, I think one of the most dangerous things that we have done as a society in the last 20 years is the concept of hate speech. And the one side is using that to say, well, if you oppose this issue, well, that's hate speech. We don't have to respond to it. It's hate speech. It's therefore is irrelevant and immaterial to the upcoming argument. What we're having here is it shuts down debate, and that is frightening in a democracy.
You know, the beautiful thing about being an American is the Bill of Rights. And the Bill of Rights guarantees a contest of ideas, a dialogue, a big, great conversation. And as Americans, we should all be able to freely, without vitriol, to partake in that great conversation. But unfortunately, increasingly, in an era of extreme political correctness, in an era that does not take the First Amendment seriously, what we have entered into is a sense that if you agree with me, you're fine. But if you disagree with me, you must be disabused of the view that you are a consecrated, sanctified human being. And it goes to the question of basic civility, diplomacy, and frankly, I think that it is one of the issues that most concerns Americans. That in the country known for our liberties, our self-governing abilities, our abilities to go into the public square and to have a voice. I mean, these are the issues, Kip, that are powering this age of rebellion and revolt.
One optimistic thing I think I've seen is there's a much more public participation in this coming election cycle than I've seen in the past. People are fired up about it. And the, quote, silent majority, whatever you want to call them, are finally getting involved. They're bypassing the traditional partisan system.
Yeah, may I say, I think it is very important and encouraging that we've seen, very large numbers of Americans, by historic standards, come out to participate in primaries and caucuses. And by the way, I am an irredeemable optimist. I am, a hopefulist to the core. But may I say, even when you look relative to a country of 320 million people, that the actual percentage of people who went out and voted in a primary or a caucus is still under 10%. So I think that we have, we're yet to hear potentially from 90% of eligible voters. And so it's yet to be seen whether the things that we're talking about and so many other things will actually drive people to the polls in very large numbers this November. And, I think it's the right time to say that the first duty of Christian citizenship is to vote, even in a year with imperfect choices.
Well, vote your values. We know what we stand for as Christians.
We do indeed, and it is very important to vote your values, and it's very important to encourage everybody in our own sphere of influence to vote. As we've discussed in this program, and it seems like a cliche, but it happens to be true, the stakes could never be higher for the things that we as Christians believe, and it's important that we let our voice be heard this November.
Tim Giglein, thank you so much for being a guest on World Lutheran News Digest. As always, we value your insight.
It's a blessing and an honor. Be of good cheer, and thank you.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. and again at 9:30 a.m. Saturday Central Time on Worldwide KFUO. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Wednesday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen. World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.